at the buzzer. They pour it on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, basically two fired basketball coaches who have all the answers and have been undefeated for numerous years, talking ball, talking teams, talking players, talking issues. D squared, how is life?
Oh, are you kidding me? Life is good. College basketball. I can see it, Seth. I can see it. And then
it's right around the corner. It's right around the corner.
It's right around. It never stops. Hey, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Don Calipari always came on my radio show and said he thinks college basketball should play games and get on ESPN and do all the things that we do in August. Do you like any of that?
I think it's hard because August, the start of football training camp is beginning. In August, you've got college football coming back. You've got fantasy football and all that stuff going on. Do I think that we could use a spring training type 2 weeks maybe to play some exhibition games or organized practice here if they're having the guys? Not a bad idea. I think August is hard because, you know, let's face it, the Summer League was a tremendous success. Unbelievable. I had a chance to participate in it. It was incredible. But when you flip to August, here's what you got going against you. You got Major League Baseball pennant races, which have been pretty good. You've got the start of people are just itching for this NFL stuff. And, you know, there's enough guys doing stupid stuff that stays in the media every single day. And then you got the start of the football season. And then, you know, now there's a new season. It's the end of the basketball recruiting season. Because we got guys, obviously, you know, in college basketball, you know, reclassifying. And you've got teams coming on these international trips, which, you know, I mean, this year it seemed like more teams went overseas this summer than ever before. So I think it's a little bit of a push. What do you think?
I love it. I do. Because everything you mentioned isn't really happening. Football isn't really happening. College football isn't really happening. You're waiting. Pennant races, yeah, they're there, but they're not really. It's September. I think when Calipari mentioned that to me, he said, look, he said, think about it. The Summer League was a success. Why? Because you had hoops, you had good stuff, you had good storylines. We need more storylines. And you know what? I like the idea as a test run.
I got a question. On your radio show, what are you talking about right now?
On my radio show, what I would be talking about right now, if they were playing, would be Indiana basketball. But they're not playing, so I'm trudging through a Colts preseason where who gives a rat's whether the punter's any good or not. You know, the only thing anybody in Indianapolis and most cities really wants to talk about when it comes to football right at this moment is a quarterback. That's exactly right. And the schedule. Who do we open up with? What do they look like? Hey, look, Seth, I'm telling you, on talk radio, it would be a boon for us, Indianapolis. You got IU. Look, Purdue was a big topic of conversation. I went and watched them play on Friday, and they're going to be very good, by the way. People downing them because of the loss of Biggie Swanigan are nuts. But, yeah, I love the idea. I do. I think college basketball needs to do as many things, try as many things as possible to keep itself in the mindset of the average fan. I do. Can't just be September. Can't just be March.
Yeah, you know, I do agree that we've got to become a 12-month sport. It seems like other big time sports become 12.
Right, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this. Let's take LeVar Ball, all right, who we all don't want to talk about, but everybody talks about. Let's take LeVar Ball, and let's just say that LeVar Ball did all that stuff when Lonzo was in college, before going to college, and they were playing games. It would blow the sport up. And there's another LeVar Ball coming. I'm not saying in the same way. I'm just saying people now have seen the power of being brash, of being bold, in connection with your kid. I'm telling you,
It could end up with Marvin Bagley, and we're going to talk about Marvin Bagley later. Good. We're also going to talk to Kansas's Bill Self later, who's just got back from a trip overseas, and it'll be interesting to talk to Bill about just his team, a very different team, losing Frank Mason. Having a number of transfers that are going to become eligible. Speaking of brash, speaking of people that we're talking about these days, Marvin Bagley, a guy that, committed to Duke. You know, you're talking about, a lot of people are talking about him. Like, people talk about the guy like he's LeBron, like he's KD, like he's, you know, going to change the game. And now Mike DeCourcy wrote an article the other day, and actually I agreed about with it, saying, look, the kid's a talent. There's no doubt about it. He can do things very few players can do. He's got size, athleticism, skill. You know, and I came out and said, that's great. There's still a transition from high school to college. The Drew League, as good as it is, all right, is not organized basketball. It's not set offenses and defense. It's more transition. The stats are a little bit inflated. Bagley's terrific. What's your take on, one, a guy reclassifying in the middle of the summer? Kind of what's your take on, like, he's good, but what's going to happen to Marquise Bolden? What's going to happen to Wendell Carter? How good can Duke be?
Hey, let me go through a couple of things. Number one, reclassifying to me seems to be a joke. I mean, what are these high schools doing? I would have never been able to finish high school. Look, it's a different world. I get all that. You can take online classes. I don't know why, in the scheme of life, somebody doesn't want to be a senior in high school. I don't know. Like, there are, you get to be a senior in high school one freaking time. Having said that, I get it. It's a new world. I don't want to be the old curmudgeon. But here's the deal.
Yeah, the guy wants to get to his NBA career quick. That's what he wants to do. Yeah, get to his next contract.
And that's fine. I get all that. But at some point, you got to live your life. I mean, at some point. All right, but I'm wrong about that, and I know I am. Okay, let me go to two people. I'm going to give you two people, and you're going to tell me, wait, when I say them, you're going to go, you're nuts. I'm Lamar Odom and Josh McRoberts. I'll tell you why I give you both of them. Both were 6'10", 6'11". Both were the number one players in their class at one point. People forget that. Josh McRoberts was the number one player in his class. Yeah. Josh McRoberts can jump as high as you want, run as fast as you want, pass, great vision, shoot the ball, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Lamar Odom, the same thing. All right. The difference isn't a guy saying, well, he's 6'11", he's long-armed, he can shoot the ball. No, no. Those guys were that. The difference is in KD and LeBron and whomever, and those two guys, is how tough are you? How hard are you going to work? How much are you willing to be a teammate? How much are you willing to sacrifice? Because you think about KD and you think about LeBron. They're not afraid to sacrifice. How big is your ego? Do you have a team ego? So when I listen to guys like DeCourcy, and then DeCourcy's fine, but I listen to guys talk about, wow, he's going to revolutionize the game, blah, 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 blah. I always think of Lamar Odom, and I think of Josh McRoberts. And they're both good players, really good players. Josh McRoberts, the nicest kid in the world, and has had a great NBA career, but they haven't revolutionized the game. It doesn't matter, all this, blah, blah, blah. To be LeBron, to be KD, to revolutionize the game, you've got to have a servant's heart, and you've got to have a worker's personality, and we'll see if he has it. If he does, hey, sky's the limit. If he doesn't, he'll be a good NBA player, making a lot of money, yay-rah, but he ain't going to be those two guys.
Well, actually, DeCourcy said what I've been saying for the last few weeks, and I've watched a ton of film on Bagley, but, you know, he won a state championship as a freshman in high school in Arizona and hasn't won anything since. Like, his EYBL team in the spring was 2-14. His high school team last year lost in the first round of the state playoffs. So, like, my thing is there's more to being a great talent than being a great player.
I agree with you.
It's like, is he easy to play with? How tough is he? Is he going to run the court? Is he going to, you know, look, that Duke locker room, you've got personalities. You've got Grayson Allen. You've got Marquise Bolden, who's expecting to play. You know, you've got Wendell Carter, who is a mountain masquerading as a man. The guy's an absolute beast. Maybe the best low block player that I've seen in a long time. You've got Trent Jr., who can really score it. So you've got a lot of pieces, and they got to fit together.
Let me just say this. You know, you and I are talking about this. We're not rooting against the kid.
No, I think I'm a fan of the kid, but it's not as easy as people think.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes when you don't just immediately say, hey, look, man, this kid is the greatest of all. He's the next LeBron. No. Look, great players have great toughness in the offseason. And great toughness means this. You go into the club, or you're getting your ass up to go work out for 5 hours. You're going to go see, you know, whomever, or you're going to be in the gym lifting weights. I mean, what are you doing? And that's toughness. Like, people think toughness is getting in a fight, or people think toughness is talking or whatever. No, And guys like LeBron, guys like Durant, guys like Jordan, always improved their game, always got in the gym, always worked on their bodies, and they did it relentlessly and forever. And then the riches and then the championships came. And sometimes we get that mixed up.
Yeah, no, I we're on the same page. I think the kid, look, I hope the best for the kid. And watching video on the kid looks terrific. But there's a fine line, a very fine line. And, you know, I know we get all caught up in the rating. Well, you know, Duke's the number one recruiting class now. And, you know, the kid's the number one player in the country. And here's the deal. Those things are just numbers. In the end, can you help your team win? How hard are you going to work? What type of teammate are you going to be? How much are you going to buy in? Because you're only going to be there seven months. And I think that's the challenge for whether it's Coach K or Cal or, you know, Bill Self. Although Bill Self, we're going to talk to him later, is going to do it a little bit differently because he's doing a lot of transfers. So he gets a kid, he gets him immersed in that program. But getting that many good players that have the same aspiration as you on the same page to play for each other and play to win and compete. Like, I'm not negatively trashing the kid. I'm just saying, like, everyone thinks it's easy. Like, I spent a week at the Adidas Nations camp. Really good, some good young players. They all think it's easy. But then you sit and you watch the college guys, and you probably know this kid. The best player in the college, of all the guys that were from college, were a kid named Elise Johnson from Missouri State. MVP of the college little tournament they had or whatever, you know, whatever they, when they played. Now, that dude wasn't rated whatever. He just worked at his game. I mean, he just got after it every day. Robert Williams, probably the second or third best player. No one even knew a year ago who Robert Williams was. All right? He's a lottery pick. So, like, as much as we talk about all these guys, understand there's so much more that goes into it than size, strength, athleticism, and skill. And by the way, your boy Aubrey Dawkins looked really good. Really good.
Aubrey Dawkins can really play. Like people think he's one of the rare guys that could just come into a game and light it up. But, you know, here's the deal. To your point, and you know, we can move on, but to your point about Bagley and all these kids, look, if I'm 18 years old and I go to Duke for 7 months and I'm going to be the first pick in the draft, all right, I better have some good people around me, man, because I'm going to tell you right now, I might be. And I was raised, you know, my parents were teachers. My dad was a principal for a while. So two-family home. I would have screwed that up so fast with stupid stuff so if I didn't have – I'm telling you. So the idea that you can, all because of ability, all of a sudden be a guy, that you can be. But you better have the right people around you because you're 18 years old at the end of the day, and you're going to do stuff 18-year-olds do, but you got money in your pocket and time. So I'm looking at, you know, the thing, it takes a village. Well, let me tell you something. 18 years old, millions in your pocket, women everywhere that are 10 years older than you throwing themselves at you, a whole different ball. You better have people around you. And that, to me, has always impressed me about what LeBron was able to do. LeBron's guys around him were always great. Kevin Durant's mother, you and we've heard a long time, always
solid.
Great. And you cannot undersell that with a kid. You just can't. Particularly 18 years old, on his, you know, 82 games, he's going to be at home for 41, so there's going to be 8 million people wanting him after the game. He's going to be on the road for 41, there's going to be 8 million people hounding him, whether it's reporters, whether it's women, whether it's, you know, hangers-on. You better have strong people around you, and that all factors into all of this, whether or not a kid is iconic or just has a career.
No, I totally agree. Hey, real quickly, but
let me ask you a coaching thing. Can I ask you a coaching thing?
Certainly. Okay, you can ask me whatever you want. It's Greenberg and Dockage. This is what we do.
Right. Hey, here's what I like for Coach K. Coach K has completely reinvented himself. And if I'm Coach K and I'm sitting there with a bad hip, a bad knee, and you know, all this stuff that Coach K goes through, I'm invigorated by the fact that I've totally changed who I am as a coach, meaning you mentioned all the guys that they're going to have. See, to me, that is incredibly cool for him, that he's going to have all these guys, one and done, 7 months, whatever it is. I think that would really invigorate a guy of his age. I think good for him, smart. God bless him. I do. I think it's great.
You know what would invigorate me? If I had a chance to coach all those good players. I mean, like,
here's
the deal. You know, I wouldn't be talking to you. I can tell you that much. I wouldn't be a fired coach.
Hey, I had a bunch of one-and-dones, but they were freshmen that after they spent a year with me said, to hell with this. I'm getting out of here. That's a
exactly.
different one-and-done.
But, I mean, look it's I think whether it's Mike or whether it's John or whether it's Self or whether it's Steve Alford, look, the game has changed. The kids have changed. You know, the culture of the game has changed in terms of, you know, think about this. Before, if a kid was a lottery pick, he went out. Then if a kid was maybe, you know, to the end of the first round, he went out. Then if a kid was guaranteed a contract as a second rounder, he went out. Hey, this is going to be soon that guys are just going to say, you know what, I'm going to go out. So what do you have to do? As a coach, you've got to be progressive. John Calipari, obviously, was the first one to embrace it. Other people have followed. And, you know, it's an arms race. And it seems like there are two guys or three guys with the most opportunity to get these elite players. And now, you know, they've got to coach them. And that's just the way it is. But in the end,
and yet,
I say it every year, you better have a couple cagey veterans on your team that can coach your locker room, that can keep guys together, because all those guys individually cannot win a national championship.
And there you go. There's Grayson Allen. What are you going to do? This is a great opportunity for Grayson Allen. I'll say that. And the other thing about it is, even though you got all these great guys, and you mentioned it, you mentioned Calipari, and you know, Krzyzewski's right there. There's still room for Villanova, baby. There's still room for a team like Villanova.
Sure.
Where who knows if any of these guys are going to make any kind of impact in the NBA. You know, who knows? I mean, Josh Hart may. I don't know. But at the end of the day, there's still Villanova sitting there.
Yeah, it is Villanova. I think that's the interesting thing about the NCAA tournament and college basketball this year is because you've got Arizona out there. Now, the West Coast, Arizona's got a team. They've got a good group of returning players. Do they get good enough point guard play? They got DeAndre Ayton, who obviously is in the same conversation with Michael Porter. Hey, you got the thing going on at Missouri right now. I mean, you know, Michael Porter was at this Adidas Nations things also. You know, he looked really, really good. You got Michigan State that has that sophomore class back. You know, that freshman and now are sophomores. You bring Jalen Jackson with a mix. You've got a number of really good teams, but they all have a different dynamic. And, you know, Kentucky's really, really, really young. I mean, ridiculously young. You know, whether it's Wenyen Gabriel or Sasha Calais Jones, they're their upperclassmen. You're right. I think Grayson Allen, I mean, this will be really interesting because he is got to be the leader of this team in a lot of ways, but will these guys follow him? They also obviously have, you know, tremendous depth in their lineup, and they've got a pure point guard in DeVal.
Here's the thing that I hope, and you, Reese, Jay and Jay, you know, you kind of set the tone for college basketball. So will you guys stop with the whole green room stuff and move to, like, there's different dynamics on different teams? I think that'd be a fascinating thing for college basketball this year to talk about and emphasize not the individual, but, man, are all these teams different? You know what I mean? Like, man, this you know. So so get that done for me, will you, please?
Oh, yeah, because I got a lot of juice. You know, when I talk, usually Jake listens and no one else.
You know, but it's Jake
is very attentive, so that is a really helpful thing. I mean, you know what? We're going to get a little insight from some folks because we're going to have Bill Self, Kansas head coach, Hall of Famer, join us, and we'll discuss his thoughts on just recruiting in general and the state of the game and the state of the Jayhawks. But first, a reminder that we'd like to hear from you. Whether you're new to the podcast or have been listening for some time, we'd like to know how we're doing. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. If you like what you hear, make sure you're subscribed so we're easy to find the next time. And if you subscribe in the ESPN app, we can send you an alert whenever we have a new episode. And you can always tweet us your thoughts at # student section. I'd like to welcome in Kansas head coach Bill Self to courtside with Greenberg and Dockich. Dockich is somewhere. We can't find a dude, but I'll have to do this by myself, and hopefully we'll make some sense out of it. Coach Self. perfect trip to Italy with your team. What did you learn about your guys from the trip?
Well, you know, we didn't have our full complement of players, at least part of the time. But I think and the competition wasn't terrific by any stretch. But I think we shoot the ball pretty well. We can definitely play fast. You know, the core group of our guards with Svee and LeGerald and Devontae are back, and then you throw in Malik Newman and Marcus Garrett. That's a pretty good group of guards right there. And we've got to have a big guy come through. But I think from a positive standpoint, I think athletically how we can share and create some havoc and certainly shoot the ball from the perimeter.
You talk about Malik Newman. Obviously, he sat out last year, had him in practice every day. But, you know, throwing him into a game, having to not be part of that scout squad, but actually trying to run a team and basically connect with the rest of the team. How did he fit in terms of a role and understanding playing within your system?
The system's a little bit exaggerated right now. When you're playing for 24 seconds and you tell your guys, hey, just go get a shot as quick as you can, it's really not – I don't think we got really – I mean, nuts and bolts, yeah, we got some stuff in. But I think as far as playing with others and sharing it, you know, Malik is he can play on the ball, but he's primarily a combo guard and is probably better off the ball right now. We got to get him where he's creating more for others. But he's a willing passer for the most part, but he can just go – he can go get his own off 2 feet, which is probably – probably as well as anybody that we've had here. And so I'm excited about that. But biggest thing with him was trying to get him to do the things that you know, values winning as much as anything else and not just be a scorer. And so he's doing those things, and it seems like to me he's shooting the ball a lot better because he's thinking about the right things.
Isn't that what those trips were all about, Bill, just trying to kind of get guys to better understand, kind of you can unplug them and reboot them when you start up and – get through boot camp? But is that the greatest value of those trips, you know, the time together, getting guys to a little bit in a kind of a more relaxed atmosphere, understand kind of how to be winning players and how to kind of buy into what you guys want to do?
I think so. You know, we had 10 workouts going into it, and Seth, you've taken teams over there, but our 10 workouts were probably be on a scale of 1 to 10 what a regular season workout would be, they'd be a 1. I mean, you know, just, hey, guys, let's go. Hey, let's do some shooting drills. Let's get loose. Not intense at all. And I was talking to one of our players, and I said, how many times do you think we practiced for this? He said, I don't know, countless. I said, no, the number's 10. and during the course of a season, we're going to practice 150 times or whatever it is, 100 times. And I said, how hard are the practices? He said, God, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And then the veterans say, what are you talking about? We hadn't even had a practice yet. This is like pickup ball. So I think little things like that to kind of get the guys, the young guys' attention on kind of what we expect and kind of the culture, I think they are very positive. I think it was a positive trip.
How about like Marcus Garrett and Billy Preston? I mean, you know, those are two guys. This is a totally new experience. And, you know, like, you know, I know that for you, redefining, playing hard, understanding how to practice, the speed of everything. How do guys like that pick that up when you're really kind of handing it to them in a pace that really won't probably be realistic after you guys do your boot camp?
I think Marcus has handled it great. You know, he played for Paul Graham down there in Texas, and Paul and I were assistants together, and you know Paul, and you know he had coach at Washington State. He's been through some stuff, and 4 years with Paul, you know, that would prepare you as far as you know, work ethic and thinking right thoughts and everything. Billy, you know, played at Oak Hill for Steve Smith last year, just 1 year with Steve, and obviously had improved a tremendous amount on this, but Billy's a guy that has relied on size and talent for the most part to basically outplay his opponents during the majority of his high school time. Not as much last year, but so it's still a learning process for him, and it's going to take some time. But they're both really talented. Marcus is probably a little bit more talented than we thought, and Billy is everything we thought he would be from a talent standpoint. Now we just got to get those guys clicking with the others.
How is Big Doak doing? How, you know, this is his first time back, kind of getting after it a little bit.
Conditioning, he's doing
and things of that nature. I know that he got in great shape at the start of last season for him. How's that been, you know, after having all that time off?
It's been better than average, but he's heavy right now. He checked in at 303 and got down to 262 in great shape when he broke his wrist or required season-ending surgery in the middle of December. So he's gained a few pounds but he'll lose that, you know, going in. He's worked hard to when you're so limited when you can't do anything. I think the natural thing with him would be to gain weight, and yeah, he's gained a little bit, but it's not much. So he can get in better shape, and he's got to get in better shape because he needs to be able to stay out of foul trouble and play extended minutes. But he looks good. You know, he's a, you know, you, if I was guarding against him, I'd say, God, you know, just don't let him get close to the basket. but when you're that big and that strong, it's hard to keep somebody from getting close to the basket. But he's certainly a weapon that a lot of people don't have, but just because, you know, he's so explosive down tight.
Yeah, I mean, the foul trouble thing last year, even a little bit he played, I miss getting in foul trouble. How does that change what you're going to have to do defensively, like in terms of ball screens or how you're going to guard the post or how far you're going to extend out? Does that impact that a little bit?
Maybe. You know, because one thing, if you extend out and you get beat, you force him right to the big guy, and that puts him in foul, you know, situations. But it's also, you know, if he's a shot blocker and rim protector, it could also be a very positive thing. So he's going to have to get a lot better in playing his man before he catches it, and certainly being able to slide his feet and not be careless defensively. But he's still going to get in foul trouble. I just don't know. And you know as well as I do, officials, even though it's been cleaned up so much, they could still call a foul every possession on the post if they chose to. And so, you know, and with a big guy like that, there's obviously going to be contact. So he just got to get where he plays smarter, and I think he will with time. But we'll have our moments where, hey, 17 minutes in, you know, I mean, 3 minutes in, 17-minute mark, dude's got two fouls. I mean, I'm sure that's going to happen.
How about, like, you know, Devontae coming off watching what Frank went through last year? I mean, that had to be a good lesson for him. But does he feel like it's an undue pressure watching Frank kind of evolve from where he was as a freshman to where he is, you know, now? I mean, as a coach, I would be wondering, like, what's going through his mind and how he's handling that.
You know what? I haven't talked to him about undue pressure, but he has said that he's going to do everything he can to have a big senior year like Frank did. And he wasn't talking about National Player of the Year. He was just talking about just to have a great year. And, you know, when we got back from Italy, the guys, were allowed to go home and we start school on Monday and then, you know, come back, you know, this weekend or whenever, just make sure you get back by Sunday evening. You know, Devontae went home for like 4 days, said, I've had enough. I got to get back, you know, so just so he can get back in the gym to work, because he is thirsty right now. He and Malik spent about as much time in the gym shooting the ball as anyone we've ever had here.
You know, it's interesting for you. You guys have been able to recruit great players, you have number one picks in the draft and things of that nature, but you've also done a lot with transfers and, you know, this year is no different. And, you know, you've got Newman, who's eligible to play. You had Charlie Moore sitting out. You've got the Lawson brothers who are sitting out. How is that changed? Like, how is recruiting changed? Like, I've been out of it 5 years. Obviously, fifth-year transfer is kind of a category to itself. But you've had some pretty good success, you know, picking some pieces and finding guys that fit. How's that come about? Is that become the norm? I've seen you guys and actually Mark Few's done it as well very successfully.
You know what? I don't think it was our goal going in. I you know, if we could just go out and get the best freshman every year, then of course that's probably the direction we go. But with our situation, you know, we had a nice team last year, but we only lost really, you know, we lost three key players: Frank, Landon, and Josh. But this year, I think there's a legitimate chance we're going to lose our top six guys. And so my thinking was, instead of relying on five freshmen or to start next year or whatever it would be, four freshmen and one returning guy or whatever, if you had a, you know, some guys setting out, you know, it puts less pressure on you to recruit starters as freshmen. You know, we want to recruit freshmen to start, but on the flip side, it's nice to have a little bit of experience back there, so you're not just playing five all the time or four all the time, even if it's from a reserve role standpoint. So, you know, we got a couple of guys that are proven that we feel like if they set a year, you know, that can be starter type guys. So it takes a little bit less pressure, puts less pressure on this next year's recruiting class.
Now it seems, you know, with the volatility of rosters, it just almost seems like it makes sense, because you do need, you know, to me, the teams that are really successful, that you need a couple of guys that can coach the locker room, to have been there, that get it, and who can, you know, help you be a player coach team. So, I mean, obviously it makes a lot of sense. Got to ask you about Diedrich. Obviously he didn't go on the trip. He's back on your team. I know I read some stuff to say that, you know, he's still with the program. Good lesson, hard to split up brothers. I mean, how difficult was that just to go about that whole thing? I mean, you know, I can't even imagine having two brothers on the team and having to discipline one. I mean, is that just, it is what it is? It's one of those deals.
Yeah. It was fine. I love those guys. You know, they've been great since they've been here, but we had a situation that escalated and he didn't handle it very well. And so to me, it was a, you know, that wasn't that hard a decision, and he was 100% okay with it. He knew. Mm-hmm. You know, family's great and have been great. So, yeah, it was a situation that it was, you know, it's obviously temporary. It's a short term deal, and when he gets back, we'll be ready to go. But in no way did that take away from what we think of him or anything like that. But it is something that, you know, just like when, you know, your own son or daughter, you know, doesn't mean you love them less just because you ground them. And that was kind of one of those situations, and he was 100% on board with it. He was very good about it.
How good was Gerald Vick? I mean, as I watched him last year, I thought that dude, like every time I watched him, he just got better and better and better. I mean, is that what you see in him? You see kind of a guy, a chance to be really special?
Yeah, I do. He's a good player. He's a guy that we thought all along would had a chance to be good, but he's gotten a lot better faster than probably what we had imagined. And he's just so athletic, and certainly, you know, he's shooting the ball better. And he's got a lot. He's still got a long ways to go, but it's been fun to watch his growth. He's got a chance to be a really good player.
I just want to let you know your coaching career is in good shape, because I got a chance to do a couple of games that the Morris twins coached in the TBT. And I'll tell you one thing, they were into it now. I just want to know, did they call you for a little coaching advice? Because they told me it totally changed their perception of coaching and being coachable. So I want to know if you coached those guys up a little bit.
Those guys, they actually did, believe it or not, call me and say, "Coach, now tell us again how we beat a 2-3 zone." Because, you know, they played, I guess, Boeheim boys or whatever. And we went over a couple of things, you know, simple things that we did. And from what I was told, the first 30 minutes they executed.
Carved it up.
But that's what zones do sometimes. Sometimes they get you standing and thinking. But I was told the last 10 minutes they kind of fell apart. So I'm sure that was great coaching experience for the twins. But those guys are they're pieces of work, and I mean that in a positive way. Fun to be around, but it was good to see some of my ex guys do well in that tournament.
They were really good. I think the first 30 minutes, you would have been proud of them. They were running second cutters behind the defense, hitting the short corner, skipping it, posting it. I mean, it was like a clinic. Tell them it had less to do with what they did the last 10 minutes and more to do with some of their shot selection.
Yeah.
Some guys got a little sped up against the pressure.
well, you know, there was a time or two maybe back when they played for us that their shot selection wasn't perfect either.
Well, they had Tyshawn at the point, so.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, Bill, hey, thanks so much for doing this, and I know you're excited to kind of put those guys through boot camp, which can you real quick explain what boot camp is real quick? Because I was there the last day of boot camp a year ago, I think, and it was a celebration the last day.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a mental thing that we put our guys through for 2 weeks. Anything goes, basically. And and anything could go, you know, whether it be 5 a.m. wake up call to workouts to afternoon type things to, you know, if you're a minute late to tutoring, if you're, you know, a minute late to a class, it's just anything goes. Whatever we say, you know, that's 2 weeks that they can't argue with us. And certainly, you know, through the drill work and getting their bodies in shape, but also getting their feet in shape and everything else, it's probably more than most have gone through. Of course, it's not anything that they can't get through, but certainly, they have a sense of pride when they do it together as a team. And I think it's been a great team building experience for us.
It was fun for them to celebrate their last day of boot camp. I you know, we used to do something similar, and then we used to do some kind of, we used to go to those courses where you got to do all these things together, kind of like a Navy SEAL thing. But watching them celebrate that day was a lot of fun. And, you know, good luck with that. And I look forward to seeing you sometime this fall to come out and watch practice. And I really do appreciate you kind of give me a little bit of your time. I know you're real busy.
Okay, bud. Thanks, Seth.
All right, man. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
Once again, I'd like to thank Kansas coach Bill Self for his time and insight into the Jayhawks, college basketball, and basically the summer, because the summer's a busy time of the year. But now we're going to the real questions. We're digging a little bit deeper. We're going outside the box. Joshy, we're going into the student section.
We are.
What's shaking? Yeah. What are we doing here? Well, who's talking to us?
Well, Seth, they heard you ask those phenomenal questions to Bill Self, but like you said, these are the real hard-hitting questions. These are the ones that really put the butts in seats, the seats of the student section. The first one we got is from Jeff King. Jeff is at JeffKing51. And, Seth, he wants you to list a couple of small conference teams that are well-coached and will be worth watching this season.
Well, I'll tell you, Florida Gulf Coast, Joe Dooley, a terrific coach, very talented roster. He's got a legitimate front court, and the kid Doyle from Michigan just transferred. It gives him another front court player, does a great job of pounding it inside, experienced backcourt. Let me tell you something, Florida Gulf Coast, you want to watch a team from the Atlantic Sun, they are a really good team. And then, you know what, take a trip down to the Ivy League, because the Ivy League is such a well-coached league, and they've got three teams in Princeton, Harvard, and Yale that all can flat out play. Princeton, Mitch Henderson does a terrific job. He's got three starters. Actually, he's three leading scorers returning. Harvard, a talented sophomore group right now that can play against anyone. And then James Jones at Yale's just done a terrific job. So if you're looking at the Ivy League, you're looking at Florida Gulf Coast, and probably the last one, Will Brown at Albany's really done a nice job. You know, if you're in the New York upstate area, you don't want have a chance to get over to Syracuse, go over to Albany. Watch those guys play. They're pretty good.
Next one, Eric Aldridge at ealdridge1389 says, "What's up?" Haven't heard that one in a while.
Yeah, it's in a way back machine.
It definitely is. And Eric wants to know which non-power conference school will be the next to join the likes of Gonzaga, Butler, Wichita State, teams that could consistently compete and get to the second weekend of the tournament.
You know, I mean, it's not that easy. You know, as you go through teams, can Middle Tennessee from Conference USA be a team that, you know, they knocked off Michigan State? They've had some success. They're a talented team, extremely well coached. You know, they're a team, you know, if you want to go out to the West Coast and the Mountain West, and that's not, you know, someone from that conference eventually is going to emerge. Look, those four letters still, UNLV. Pretty powerful. Marvin Menzies has done a good job in his first year recruiting. I wouldn't call them a low major. I'd call them right now a Mountain West. They don't have the exposure of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has really impacted them a great deal. But, you know, someday UNLV, they might not get back where they were when Tark was there, but everything's there. They've got the resources. They've got the energy. They've got facilities. They should be the elite program in that conference, in the Mountain West Conference. And it, when you go outside of that, you know, you have to go and, you know, maybe, well, you know, does Harvard emerge with this young, talented class they've recruited at a high level? Those are the main ones. I don't see, you know, I don't see the Valparaisos, you know, emerging from the horizon. Maybe Northern Iowa, now that Wichita State's gone, can they emerge, you know, from the Missouri Valley? Maybe. They've got facilities. They've got a great coach. Their recruiting has gone well, and they have a style of play that is difficult so that, you know, they have a style of play that can get you into the second weekend because of their style of play, because they control the tempo of the game with their offense and their defense.
And finally, Seth, it wouldn't be a proper student section without who?
ID Kelly, my guy.
That's
Come
right.
on out.
ID
I got to get Dockage to appreciate it. I'm not sure my man D squared fully appreciates ID Kelly.
I don't think he does.
It's going to be a little education process, I think we can get him there.
I think Dockage thinks that ID Kelly's a nuisance. He doesn't understand that he's sitting front row in the student section every single podcast. And today, ID Kelly 1 says, Avery Johnson, who we had on the podcast a little bit earlier in the summer, seems like a rarity going from the NBA to the college ranks. Who do you think are the most successful coaches who have done the same or could do the same in the future?
Well, you know, I think you're going to – I'm not sure you're going to see a trend, because, guys, once they get into the NBA, there's no recruiting. It's just coaching. It's relationships. It's – obviously, you're recruiting free agents, but – Let's just name a couple. Quinn Snyder, he was in college basketball, got, you know, kind of his hand slapped at Missouri. But, look, he's got a charisma about him. He's got a passion about him. He's a terrific coach. He understands the college game. Boom, put a check mark next to him. Quinn Snyder. Earl Watson runs an AAU program, very, very successful AAU program. He's the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, played at UCLA. You know, he understands the culture of college basketball. Bam, put a check mark next to him. And, you know, here's the deal. Avery Johnson is great. He's got the personality. He's got the energy. He's got the passion. And then he did a really smart thing. He hired John Pelfrey, who was a former head coach at Arkansas, assistant to Billy Donovan. If you're going to make that jump and you haven't had that college experience, ID Kelly won, you better hire an assistant coach that understands the business of college basketball. Because the business of college basketball is very different than the business of the NBA. So it's not just the X's and O's, but how you acquire talent, how you develop talent, how you deal with the boosters, how do you deal with compliance, how do you deal with academics. Jason Kidd would be a guy to me because of who he is and his personality and his, you know, how players can respond to him. If he had the right assistant coaches, he'd be very successful. David Fizdale, another one at Memphis right now. I think David played at San Diego. I don't think he'll be leaving the Grizzlies anytime soon, but he's got a way about him that I think is really good. So I think there's more guys than you'd realize that could have success in transition. To me, the whole key is going to be, will they hire an assistant coach that understands the culture and the business of college basketball?
Interesting, Seth. As always, we appreciate those questions. Keep them coming using the hashtag student section.
Before we go, I wanted to remind you to subscribe to our show in the ESPN app, on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you prefer to access podcasts. Our thanks again to Kansas coach Bill Self. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.